Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face. Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, I can't deny the fact that I played there for 8 years. We had a lot of success. You know, Bill was my coach. You know, he traded me to Kansas City. We didn't talk for a couple months, maybe a year. And then we became friends, and I used him as a resource when I coached, when I started my coaching career, and still talk to him, you know, a lot now. And this week we're competitors, and we're always competitors. It was, as far as I'm still coaching, and so is he. So I guess it's unique from that standpoint. But, you know, as far as how much is his philosophy is in me, I think that, you know, spending time there, I think there's some similarities that I believe in and that you grow up as a player believing in. But then I think we have a different personality. I respect his friendship. I respect his guidance and leadership when I played there. But now, you know, we're competitors, and we have to do everything we can to try to beat the Patriots.
Mike Vrabel. I'm fascinated by this, Maz. I think this matchup is like borderline unprecedented. I mean, I can't think of a comp where a former player comes back and then coaches against the team he was on. When I say the team, I don't mean the uniform. I mean the actual coach and the players. And there's only two. It's like Belichick and Brady. I don't think anyone's left from 2008. Is anyone left from 2008? Was Meat here? So Gostkowski. So Gostkowski, Brady, Belichick, McDaniel, some staff members. I don't think there's any other one. But still, name another situation where a player retires, becomes a coach or a manager, and then goes back to coach or manage against his team, his former coach and teammates.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't.
We've had plenty of these with assistant coaches. Mangini, McDaniels, O'Brien. We have a lot of these. So, like, their institutional knowledge, their inside knowledge gives them a little bit of an edge against you or gives them something to hang their hat on against you. We've had that plenty. A player. And what I find fascinating is that it's this player. This, I think, folks, Mike Vrabel, I'm fond of Mike. I don't know him very well. I covered him, but I think he was one of the really great characters to come through this team. And not just because he has sort of a charismatic personality, or he's sort of has this infectious quality to him, which he really does. But he was a great player. He was a great player. He stood for everything that you stood for on the field. But then off the field, what I loved about him is that he was his own man, and he talked to you like a man, and he talked like a man and carried himself like his own person. And I think when we hear these guys talk down in Foxborough now, Maz, it's like, oh my God, they're so afraid of Bill.
Yeah, brainwashed.
They're so afraid. They're so afraid to say anything or do anything or show anything because they're petrified of Bill. And so they all sound like tool bags or scaredy cats or something. Like, what? Like, do you have a brain inside your head or anything on your own there that you can offer? Or are you just that afraid of Bill that you're not going to say anything, that we're just trying to get better every day?
I mean, not to get on this road, I never put that on them. I put that on Bill.
Okay.
But that said, there were a couple of others like him. Mankins was pretty, spoke his mind for the most part.
So Vrabel,
and Seymour.
Vrabel was in an era where there were guys like this. Rodney Harrison, chief among them. Harrison, Vrabel, those are the guys that I really remember. And they never gave away state secrets. They never spilled the beans. They never gave anything that would put the Patriots at a competitive disadvantage. But they weren't scared of Bill. Oh. And so Vrabel had it all, man. He talked the talk. He walked the walk. You forget. I just pulled some of these things that I had sort of forgotten the exact details of which. Do you know that Mike Vrabel, as a receiver, finished with 10 career receptions, all for touchdowns?
Yes. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
On 14 targets. They threw to him 14 times in his career. He caught 10 of them, and they were all touchdowns. This is from a defensive lineman who they converted into a linebacker and then asked to play tight end. He caught a touchdown. He caught 1 in 02, 2 in 04, 3 in 05, 2 in 07. He had one each in Super Bowls 36 and 38 or whatever. I can't read the Roman numerals, whatever those numbers are. He had one each in both of those Philly and Carolina Super Bowls. In week 8 of the 2007 season, how's this game? In week 8 of the 07 season, Vrabel forced 3 fumbles, had 3 sacks, recovered an onside kick, and scored a touchdown as a tight end against the Redskins. How's that game?
Yeah, no, he was unique.
Receiving touchdown, onside kick, 3 sacks, 3 forced fumbles.
Yeah, that was the role. You're running it up against poor Joe Gibbs. Wow.
In the Carolina Super Bowl, I think he had the key defensive play of the game that got that game going, is a strip sack of DeLome in the first half. Scored a touchdown later. The guy was a stud on the field.
In the St. Louis game, isn't he the one that pressured...
Absolutely.
Kurt Warner on the law pick?
Could have been flagged for hands to the face, but we'll let it go. Cracked him right in the face mask. But absolutely, he had the... I think that was the one blitz of the day. And he got to him, and that led to the touchdown for Ty Law. Hugely instrumental guy on the field. Off the field, he was just so refreshing because he wasn't afraid of Bill. We have this, so, you know, we've mocked Belichick for his unzipping himself every time he talks about Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks, the 1980s Giants, right? Vrabel was the one guy who would go back at Bill on. Vrabel, like the rest of us, got so sick of Bill talking about Carl Banks, Lawrence Taylor, and the 80s Giants defense that Vrabel would go back and forth. So Belichick would show us film of Lawrence Taylor making a play, and then we'd go ask Vrabel about it or a player about it because, you know, this is what Bill just showed us. And Vrabel would go, ah, good Lord, Bill. Felger, look at the guy that he's going against. It's a third tight end. It's a running set. He's not even pass protecting, and he blows right by him. Of course Lawrence Taylor made that play. Go back and watch the tight end. He's got a third tight end on him. He's going one-on-one against Lawrence Taylor. What do you think's going to happen? Tell Bill to keep in his pants on Lawrence Taylor. And so Vrabel would go right back and forth. Like who does that? Oh, it's so great. Do we have this picture on NBC Sports Boston? So then Bill started to razz Vrabel about it and gave him a Giants helmet. And this is a picture from 2007 where instead of his Patriots helmet, Vrabel went to his locker room and had a Giants helmet, and he wore the Giants helmet for the day. And so, like, there was no other player who could do that, but Vrabel could get away with it. And so, and boy, was he smart as a player and embodied all these things. Now, this isn't a former assistant coach. This is a guy who's in the middle of it. Oh, Vrabel used to go back and forth with Brady at practice. Like, they used to have wars, those two. Offense, defense, and, you know, part of the why they were so great. The culture was so great. It was so freaking competitive. And, you know, Vrabel was all back and forth with Brady every day. Yammering and yapping and, you know. And now he's coaching. It's like, that's different. I'm sorry, that is way different than McDaniels. That's way different than Mangini. That's a guy that was in the mix and knows how these guys tick and all of it. I'm just so, having been there at that time and knowing, like, Vrabel's role in that locker room and that his role on that team and how he carried himself, I think it's just so ballsy that he's coming back and coaching now against him and different. And so, like, I sat down and I listened to Vrabel's press conference yesterday in Tennessee, and I was just taken back to, like, you know, you don't have to give away state secrets, but can you talk like a human being and like a man and like a person? This is great. So one of his players in that Dallas game on Monday night, after the interception, ran to the star and did the old T.O. celebration on the Dallas star at the 50-yard line.
Yeah, right.
And so we're going to use celebration one there, Jimmy. So he's asked, Rabel's asked, well, we talked to that player. I forget his name. Doesn't matter. The player said that he loved the moment, but you didn't, that you weren't that happy with it. Here's what Vrabel said.
I wasn't. I'm not, and I won't be. That's not what we want as an organization. That's not what I want as a head coach. I want our guys to play as hard as they possibly can for each other, between the whistle, as physical and as aggressive and as clean as they possibly can. And I get that there's things that go across the line between the whistles. Once the whistle blows, celebrate with a teammate, find somebody else in a Titans uniform, find a coach, and celebrate with them. We don't need to do that. That's not what we want to do. I've talked to Kevin this morning. I'll talk to the team again tomorrow. And that goes for a lot of guys. Like, we're not, that's not what I want. And if that's what they want, you know, we see it very differently.
That is just, that is, he's calling his player straight out. Has the earth stopped spinning? Has the team fabric been destroyed? Or is Vrabel just telling it like it is and telling him that that's not what we're doing here? It gets even, well, worse or better, depending how you feel about it. So the reporters circle back to it because you'll hear this reporter say, well, Mike, you know, I know you didn't like the celebration, but it gave your team a lift, or the other players seem to respond to it. Here's Vrabel.
You didn't like the celebration, but is Kevin's swagger something that's valuable to have? A guy that's willing to do that?
Willing to go out there and say, look at me? I don't know.
He said,
stop.
is Kevin's swagger important to the team? And Mike goes, what? You mean to run out there and say, look at me? Like, that is, like, that's pretty strong. Like, he's calling that guy out pretty good. Selfish, look at me. Is he afraid of, you know, but there's somehow Vrabel pulls it off, maybe because he's a former player or what, but name another coach that does that. Just go ahead, Jimmy.
Willing to go out there and say, look at me? I don't know.
He said it was a statement that we're here.
We need him to make interceptions. We need him to make tackles. We need him to lead. I'm all for celebrations. I am. I think we understand that. Just go celebrate with a teammate and have some fun, you know, with your teammates instead of, you know, that's it.
Okay, so I was taken back. You know why? I just liked Vrabel. I always did.
He was old school.
Yeah, he's just an old school football.
He was. And the other thing is that I don't know. I always found him to be intimidating, and I mean that in a good way, not like in a. I always felt like Vrabel was kind of a badass.
He's a ball buster.
But he was tough.
I went to Michigan, Ohio State 7 years ago when he was the linebackers coach for Ohio State that year, and I saw him ripping into players. I was like, this guy's. Because I was like, that's Mike Vrabel, and he looked like an absolute psycho. It was awesome.
But he wasn't like, so like, I listen to some of these, you know, maybe that's why that Van Noy rubs me the wrong way. Cause I watch Van Noy, like the Patriots used to have players that could go back and forth and not in a demeaning or sort of bitchy way, but like Vrabel would call you out or Rodney Harrison would call you out, but it was sort of, I don't know, eye to eye or man to man. I watch Kyle Van Noy carry himself. I'm like, nah, dude, that's why are you acting like that? Or these other players who are just absolutely petrified of saying anything. But Vrabel would bust your balls.
Like, no, he was real is what he was. Like, but keep going.
Like a bad question. He was asked in this press conference that I listened to about there was a play where Ezekiel Elliott almost got the first down. And he reached the ball over the yellow line. And this reporter said, yeah, he was just over the yellow line, which, of course, Vrabel couldn't let go.
You believe that yellow line? Sometimes. There's no Easter Bunny or Santa Claus either. Thank you, Ashley, for laughing. Thank you. It's been a while.
Last track.
It's my girl.
So he said, you believe in that yellow line? You believe in that yellow line. So I don't know, just small little things. This kind of matchup's never happened. You've never had a player.
I mean, I'm trying to think of one after you said it. Like,
name another sport. Name me any sport where an athlete retired to coach or manage and then go back and play the team that he used to play for. And I don't mean like 20 years later. I'm not talking about like Mike Singletary coaching the Niners and, you know, going against the Bears 15 years after he retired and no one was there.
I mean, Luke Walton got drafted by the Lakers. Now he coaches them. It's the only thing I can think of.
I was just say Jason Kidd.
Okay, like, there you go.
Dallas.
There like you go.
Went
Jason
back
Kidd.
There and
okay.
You'll coach against Nowitzki.
Okay, now we're talking.
Like, but in football, like as you said it, the only one that popped into my head was, did Jim Harbaugh ever go back and coach against the Colts? But even so, it was 20 years later.
Was any of the same people?
No, I don't think so. And honestly, I even say take Brady out of it. Just Bill, the fact that you're coaching against the guy you played for, you never see that. Never. And Vrabel, I mean, you know him better than I do. I dealt with him very little. But, you know, we talk about all the time about the opposing coach wetting his pants.
This guy ain't.
I don't think this guy's going to wet his pants.
As a player, so this, I don't know. Let's see. Like, I don't know. I don't know what kind of coach Mike is. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm heartened by the fact that he's, I'm late. I'm sorry. We'll pick this up on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is there anything that's different about Brady's game now from when you were his teammate several years ago?
You know, I think the thing that Tom's always doing, he's always trying to improve and to get better, whether that be footwork or what plays they're running, their concepts, how he delivers the football. How he moves in the pocket, he's always looking to improve, and that's the one thing you can always respect about, I think, that organization is that they never want to stay the same. They're always, you know, striving to improve and on what they've done, and I think that's a good message and a good model for everybody that's a coach or a player.
That's Vrabel on Brady, obviously. It's just, this is different. This is different than these other former Patriot coaching matchups. Vrabel was in the trenches every day battling Brady on the field. And they would, you know, from what you understand, he and Ty Law, too, like, they had these epic battles in practice back and forth. So it's like, it's not just a coach who can sit up top and say, well, schematically, this is what Brady wants. And it's like, Vrabel, like, knows how these guys tick. And I'm not telling you the Titans are going to win or that Vrabel's even a good coach. We don't know that yet. I'm just telling you this is different.
This is different. And, well, I don't know. I think Vrabel is also one of the great signature players to come through this team through this era. And, well, this is, if you can find another example like this in sports, I'd like to hear it. Abe in the car on the Patriots. Go ahead, Abe.
Hey, Felger, I got two takes. First, Avery Johnson, Jim and, you know, James Stewart, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he win a championship with the Spurs in the late 90s and then actually coach with the Mavericks in 06 when they made the championship? I'm not sure if they played San Antonio in the playoffs that year or not.
Okay, fair enough. That sounds like another one.
My second take is I think this is going to be a close game with Tennessee, and here's why. One, there's a couple of players on the Tennessee Titans that are still a little resentful of the Patriots. Malcolm Butler, the obvious one. Deion Lewis, and I believe Logan Ryan is still on that team.
Sure.
Second, they have a pretty good front seven, so I could see this being one of those back-and-forth games where the Patriots sort of steal it out in the end. I'll hang up and listen to you guys, but that was my take.
Okay, babe. They got a ton of Patriots. You mean, it's not just Malcolm Butler and Logan Ryan and Deion Lewis. John Robinson, their GM, was brought up in the Patriots system, was here for, I don't know, 5 to 10 years as a scouting director, and then moved up the personnel ranks, and so that's their GM. Like, they're filthy with Patriots personnel. Those teams can be dangerous.
Yeah, look, I told you, I didn't like this matchup from the beginning. I mean, I think it's a bad spot. The one break that the Patriots caught is that Tennessee won on Monday night. And so now, because if you're coming off a loss, to me, they become even more dangerous. But going in there, and you got all these guys you've played against, and look, I just think that typically, and I understand the coaches have changed over the years, but I think Vrabel has brought some of this back. Those Tennessee teams, always when you go there, tough, physical, like, and I think he's built that team in the same sort of image. They feel tough to me. What I don't know is whether they can throw the ball. Okay, so, and that's a huge thing.
The passing game there feels archaic.
It does. It really, I think their passing game is like high schoolish.
Doesn't it feel
yes,
like?
Yes, totally. So the one variable to me, though, is that I don't know that you need to throw the wide receivers to beat the Patriots. Vrabel might be smart enough to know to throw to Deion Lewis all day, get him 12 catches, and all of a sudden they're going to win.
Do you know how many touchdowns Mariota has?
Passes?
Yeah.
9.
Mike?
How many games have they played? 8?
Yeah.
5.
Bang, that's what it is.
Yeah, I was going to guess single digits. They don't.
That's bad.
It is, it's bad. So I don't know if they can throw the ball, and that's going to be a big thing. But in terms of, I think the Patriots are going to have to fight for every point they get in this game. I think it's going to be a rock fight.
I mean, let's just see, because Vrabel's not your typical coach. He's got a player mentality. He was here. He was here as you curb stomped, you know, 80% of the teams that you faced. And he has to know that the teams that come in and try and run the ball and control the thing have no shot. You have to be aggressive against the Patriots. Whether you have an elite passing game or not, that's still how you have to attack the Patriots.
Yes, and I think that defensively you might even see them, like, attack. And I'm not saying blitz all the time, because I think that can be suicide against Brady. Although, depending on whether Gronk is here or what Edelman looks like. But either way, I think you're going to see them be physical with the Patriots. That's what you're going to see.
Here's Anthony on Gronkowski. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hi, yeah, guys. I want to talk about time management. 2007, Andy Reid was the head coach of the Eagles, and he asked Westbrook to go down inside the one in terms of time management, and he saved the game. Now he's the head coach of the Chiefs, of course, and Mahomes threw for Hill with that 75-yard touchdown. And then Brady, of course, threw for Gronk in that big gain at the end. On both sides, what would you guys do? I'm purposely going down with the time management.
Okay, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Me
none,
neither, and
zero.
I have no idea
none,
we got
zero.
On the topic.
You lost me in the middle of your thing. Sorry. Don't mean to yell at you, but I have no idea what the hell you want us to talk about there. None. Mike in the car, what do you got for us?
Felger, you hung up on me yesterday, you bag of dumps.
I don't remember. Go ahead, Mike.
I said the F word, you hung up on me.
Oh,
was,
yeah, you
well, then that one's on you.
You can't say the F word, Mike.
I heard Maz in the background. He's like, oh, in the background, so I was laughing. But
yeah, you know what, Mike? I'm dropping you now.
What? Okay.
Like, oh, you heard me in the background? Too bad. You can't say the F word on the radio. Like, we got to explain that one? Seriously, I'm sorry. I'm dropping him. Sorry, I don't usually intervene like that. Like, yeah, well, if you say the F word, you can't say it.
Josiah in San Antonio with the Celtics leftover thought. Hi, Josiah.
Hey, appreciate you for taking the call. Excuse me for saying this, but I just want to point out, Gordon Hayward has been awful, and I know he was hurt last year, and people are sensitive to that, but as far as his play on the court, he's terrible. If you go back and look at all those games that they played earlier, the opponent, the offensive player, sees him, it's like they're drooling to get to him. And if I'm Stevens, I know he has loyalty to him because they played him Butler, but I would try to start Marcus Morris. I mean, the guy is just awful. I don't know if he's still hurt.
Well, so let me just stop you. Jimmy Stewart, do the Celtics have a Gordon Hayward problem?
They might. I mean, he should be on the second unit, but he won't be because he's paid starters money.
See, that's sort of an issue.
I mean, to me, they should be easing Hayward in there. And, you know, I don't know how they figure that one. He's not there yet. It's going to take, wouldn't surprise me if it takes a half season. Like, I could see that one taking a while. You see little flashes of it where he's in the flow of the game, right? That it looks like it's clicking. But a lot of times, man, it's really forced. I don't think they figured out how he's going to fit in yet. I'm not sure that his style totally fits with what they were doing
before
anyway. I don't know. He's kind of I don't want to call him a transition player, and he's more of a half court player, I guess. But I don't,
he's not another 3-and-D guy?
No, I don't think so. No, he's better than that. He can handle the ball a little bit more. And so, but he's not as deft at it as Irving is, for example. So do you want, you know, you're going to run through the offense?
I mean, his defense has sucked this year, but isn't he typically a good defensive player?
He's a good switch defender. He was in Utah.
And he can shoot.
Oh, yeah, he can shoot.
So?
Yeah, he's not J.J. Redick, but he can shoot. So
how does it not fit what they do?
And he's a good ball handler for a small forward, too.
He doesn't seem to be operating at the same speed as
the
rest of
them. Okay, well, that's clear. Is that him or is that his ankle?
I don't know. I mean, you got me. I don't know. I didn't watch him enough.
I think that's his ankle. From what I saw of him in Utah, that's his ankle.
Yeah, we hit on this yesterday. Is he naturally just a little bit slower or is this the injury? And I'd never heard that in Utah. He's supposed to be an athletic guy.
I'm trying to get answers on these questions. I haven't been able to get them yet.
In Utah, he had much better lateral quickness for the switches.
So you got to hope it's the injury. Because if this is the finished product, then, you know, that is scary. We continue with your thoughts, and I'll ask you this question. We sort of hit on this yesterday. We'll pick it up now. Malcolm Butler has sucked in Tennessee. Epically sucked and blown. Both. Just absolutely sucked. Arguably the worst cornerback in the NFL. Does that make you feel better about the Super Bowl? We discuss right after Murray's update.
Felger and Maz. At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Seattle huddling up. Down 4, but on the verge of the lead. Wilson extends the hands he has. Pass. Wilson, quick throw. And it's good. With 20 seconds to go in Super Bowl 49 with a 4-point lead over the Seahawks.
It's got to be one of the dumbest calls offensively in Super Bowl history.
It's called Halo.
Line up, power, block it. Touchdown. He probably would go in backwards.
The pass is a great idea to throw the ball to get your touchdown against those guys, unless it doesn't happen.
Patriots didn't ask for a 30-second pick. They asked for 42 and another pick.
Malcolm Butler just runs right by on the outside, and of course, it is Malcolm Butler who thought he was going to be playing for the New Orleans Saints this year. Stephon Gilmore got paid all the money coming over from Buffalo, and Malcolm Butler will tell you straight up that it shook his confidence a little bit. He thought he was going to be the guy to get paid. Then he thought he was going to be the guy to get traded to New Orleans. None of those things happened, and here he is, the number one corner in this game.
And it's weighed on him a little bit because he's had an up-and-down year.
I'm getting tired of it, and I bet you Bill's getting tired of him reacting to plays that he's giving up and turning around and complaining and putting it on his teammates. He's in a contract year, and he's like, now he wants it on film that every time he gave up a pass. No, it's that guy's fault. It wasn't my fault.
Love it.
What's really interesting here, Malcolm Butler, hero 3 years ago in the Super Bowl, has not played a defensive snap tonight. The Patriots are telling us a coach's decision.
I don't know. They gave up on him. Yeah. It is what it is. It was the coach's decision. I was just doing my job, supporting my teammates. I mean, I had nothing but great things to say about the organization. Great organization. They gave me the opportunity. I don't know what it was. I guess I wasn't playing good or they didn't feel comfortable. I don't know. I could have changed that game, though.
I feel that way. What happens now, Malcolm? Unrestricted free agent?
Aim is Cleo, so I can't tell the future.
Another New England Patriot going over to the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, there are a lot of people who thought that Malcolm Butler would have to sign a 1-year deal after the Super Bowl fiasco. But no, He's going to end up with a five-year deal worth more than $60 million. He gets more than $30 million guaranteed.
And there's your Malcolm Butler story. Malcolm Butler. I see. I'm more interested in the Vrabel thing than I am the Malcolm Butler thing, as you can tell.
You wouldn't cackle if he had a pick six, though?
Yeah, I mean, well, like, either way, there's going to be cackling. I think. I wouldn't be surprised if it turns into a non-story, though. And I have a developing opinion that I'll share with you later. I'll wait for Paul to get out of here before I bring this up, because he might get sensitive to it, being a member of the Patriots organization. But it would not surprise me if they don't pick on him. If they don't pick on him, and it's really not a story at all. But, because I said that, it'll either be a pick six or they'll score three touchdowns on him. But the fact that he has sucked in Tennessee this year, brutal. Arguably the worst starting corner in the NFL. Does that make you feel any better about the Super Bowl?
No. Completely unrelated. Totally separate story. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, both things can be true. Bill was right to move on from him this offseason, and he was wrong to bench him in the Super Bowl when they're getting gashed, especially in the second half, by a backup stiff who made a deal with Satan to play as well as he did in the playoffs. Both things can be true. He should have put Butler in at least for a couple of plays at some point in that second half.
Why do you think fans see Butler struggling and then say, see, or, you know, take some sort of victory lap on the Super Bowl thing? Like, why do they link the two?
Because I think there's always some sort of defend the Patriots thing with them. Like, because it's about the laundry. Like, To me, largely, that's what it is, because they do that with any player who leaves. I think it's anything that Bill does is right. And so, although I will say that the surprising thing about it in this case, and I don't think it's existed to nearly the level that it has in the past, but the surprising thing in this case is that they were pissed about the Butler decision in the Super Bowl. And fans were, that's as upset as I've seen fans at Belichick during his entire tenure here.
Yeah, but Butler's play this year now justifies the benching, you see, because most of these people for the last 20 years have drank the Kool-Aid of In Bill We Trust, but with that one illogical and inexcusable decision, which twisted people's heads into a pretzel or rightfully made them angry, they couldn't handle it. So now that they see Butler playing this poorly consistently through the season, now they can at least digest this and say, oh, well, this makes sense. He would have been that bad in that game back in February, too.
So I think that's possible. Like, you've never heard me say Butler cost him the Super Bowl. I don't believe that. I mean, I don't know that. Maybe he did, maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't have. I don't think there was any guarantee, because he didn't play well last year. And Bill was right not to give him the contract. I thought they should have given him one 2 years ago. But last year, he played himself right out of it. So I think the Patriots were smart to move on. So that's not it. He might have sucked in the Super Bowl, too, and they still might have lost. Of course.
That's not the point.
The point is they never tried to fix a problem. And since when is that? Since when have they ever, ever done that? Ever? Since when have they ever been gotten consistently torched with a certain personnel grouping and not tried something different with that grouping? They do it at corner routinely. Every game. You'll see Jonathan Jones in a spot, him give up some plays in the first half, and the next thing you know, in the second, there's Eric Rowe. Or you'll see Kyle Arrington, and I'm going back a couple of years, but Kyle Arrington in the Super Bowl against Seattle is getting his ass handed to him all first half, then you come out in the second, and there's Malcolm Butler. Or you'll see we've seen this a million times, Jonathan Jones on this team, 31, is running all over the place, he's not making plays, the next thing you know, you look out, and there's whoever. Someone else out there, Jason McCourty out there in that spot. They do it routinely every game.
They did it with Butler in the second game of the season last year in New Orleans. He was benched for that game.
Thank you.
And then I think it was Jones that went down, and Butler came back into the game.
They do it routinely. And that's just not that position. If there's a tight end who's getting beat in a blocking scheme, he's out, someone else is in. If there's an offensive line group that's getting torched up the middle, the next thing you know, you look up the next series, there's a different guard in there. Like, they do it every game, all the time, in every situation. And that one they didn't? In the one game that matters?
No, because he had to make an example of him. That's why.
So that's the second guess. Maybe he would have sucked and maybe he would have given up plays. The fact that they did not do in that game what they would do in any other game in any other situation, and that is mix up the personnel groupings to try and solve a problem, tells you something was up. And whatever it is, it ain't good enough.
Yeah, I even go further.
It ain't a good enough reason, because if it was good enough, you would have deactivated him. He was in uniform. You put him there to embarrass the kid. And that is indefensible.
I mean, to me, I also look at it in the simplest terms. He's better than Bettemosi and Jordan Richards.
I mean, you know,
and I know it's not perfect apples to apples.
Maz, I'm even willing to say maybe he wouldn't have been.
Yeah, I'm not.
Because we're not. I can't tell the future.
Yeah, I'm not. Because I know that Jordan, because both of those guys are gone.
How do you
and
not
Jordan
even,
Richards sucks.
How do you not even give it a crack?
Exactly.
You're on your way to giving up 500 yards.
Exactly. I mean, to me, there was no excuse for it. And I told you, and I don't know that this was a conscious, deliberate decision in this way, but I think there was an element of, okay, we made you in the Super Bowl. We're going to break you in the Super Bowl. That's what we're going to do. This was the stage where you earned your stripes and you became who you are. This is the stage where you're going to lose them. I don't think that that was a coincidence at all. The fact that the stage was that grand and he singled him out like that and let him rot on the sideline, that was personal. On some level, that was personal.
Okay, so now it's back this week. Malcolm Butler. Does it make you feel better that he sucks? Does it make you feel better that he sucks and is a bad starting corner? Does it make Murray or Maz or any of us in here feel any differently? Does it make you feel any differently? We'll pick it up with that thought and more of your calls right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, I know you're all about this year, and we all understand that this year.
That's right.
And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask about last year.
Yeah, and last year is last year. I'm not focused on last year, yeah.
What about the fact that everywhere we go, folks want to ask about Malcolm Butler? I mean, sports coaches, players, university. You're a sports fan.
Yeah, we've talked about that. That's multiple months ago.
Is there going to be any more explanation about why he didn't play?
Focused on training camp.
Would you do it any differently?
Training camp? Well, we're getting started. We're working on that right now. We'll do it the best we can.
And does it matter to you? Do you care that the fans want to know more about this?
I'm focused on doing the best that I can for the 2018 New England Patriots. That's my job. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I've always done in the past. You know, every day that I've coached here, I've done the best that I could for this football team, and I'll continue to do that. And right now, my focus is on the 2018 season, not 2017, not 2014, not 2007, not 2004, not 2001, not 2000. I'm not focused on any of those seasons. They're done.
And for this season's team, is it important for you to address the Malcolm Butler thing with your team?
It's important for me to have a good season in 2018. I'm going to do everything I can to do that. Do the best that I can for our football team. That's my job and that's my responsibility. That's what I'm going to try to do. Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
There's the Butler thing. It's a story you think will never go away. But I will say this. I think what a lot of folks said in the offseason has come to pass, and that is the team gets into the season, they start winning, and a lot of these things go to the wayside. I think that really has happened.
Sure.
You know, we haven't really been able to pick away at the Palace Q and all that stuff, which I think is all still there. But the football really does take over, especially when you're winning. And that sort of happened. So here we are again with the Titans and Malcolm Butler, and I don't know if he's a headline story this week. I don't know if he is.
No, I don't think he is. I mean, again, it's a side element to it, but the fact is the Patriots are 7-2. They're going into a bye after this. Like, they got a nice roll going. It's more about winning the game. And from that standpoint, I don't think this game's a gimme.
Let's try and zip through some calls here before we bring in Paul Perillo. Mike and Lemonster on the Celts. Go ahead, Mike. Michael! Okay, his comment said, Felger and Maz are spot on. We don't get many of those, and what do you know? He's not ready to go. Just our luck. Celtics, Eli and Haverhill. Go ahead, Eli.
Hey, guys. Listen, I have high hopes for the Celtics this year. And I know it's early, but we really need to get it together. I mean, look at the margins we're winning by. And the close games that we've lost, I feel like we've been playing too much hero basketball. You know, like when the Patriots lose early games, we buckle down, get it together. I don't think that it will be the worst thing for this Celtics team to get humbled early on. And I think it will benefit us come in April.
I'll tell you what, Eli, I think you're right. I mean, I don't know about getting humbled. I think they need some sort of event, some sort of turning point, which to, you know, sort of give them an attitude adjustment or shake things loose or recognize they need to sort of do things a little differently, I think they're due for that. I don't know if that's a bad loss or something off the court or a trade or something, but I think they might need an event.
I feel like they're getting away from what made them who they are. And what made them who they are is taking every game seriously and working for it. Like, this whole thing has been a process that's gone on here. All of a sudden now they have some good players and they think, okay, we don't have to work as hard anymore. I think that's ass backwards. Do you know, it's relatively easy to get to the level they've gotten to in the NBA. There are lots of teams that can make the second round and even the conference final. Lots of teams can do that. Not many win championships. So, you know, they can look at it however they want. If Jaylen Brown thinks he's just going to rattle them off, all the power to him, great, because he's going to fail.
Tom and Wellesley on the Mike Vrabel thing. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, guys. The closest one I can think of is Dan Reeves and Tom Landry.
Ooh, good.
Reeves played for Landry, was an assistant coach, and then went to the Broncos. And pretty sure they played Landry there.
Sure. Good one. Yeah, that's a good one. There you go. There you go. Now, since you've opened that door, maybe Shula had one or two as well. I'm just telling you, this Vrabel thing's different. This is not like going against Eric Mangini or Josh McDaniels or name it. Tom O'Brien, a former Patriots assistant. This is different. Romeo Crennel, this is different. It's a guy who lived it and was in the trenches and competed with and against Bill. Wasn't in a meeting room with him like these other coaches, but was actually there on the field. And who has been in Brady's shorts, you know, on a daily basis in the practice field and busted chops with Bill back and forth. It's just, it's different. There's something different about it. And that makes it interesting. I mean, if you ask Belichick, I don't know if this week he'd say it, but in his 19 years here, you ask him the player that understood his defense, the player now, not coach, but the player that understood his defense better or got it as quickly or understood all the tenets or could describe it all and was as immersed in the defense on an intellectual level as Mike Vrabel, he wouldn't have. That was it. It was Vrabel. He said many times, the smartest guy he ever coached. And he did it as a player, not sitting next to him on the sidelines. I just think that makes it different. And Vrabel's personality makes it all different, too.
I just don't know if Vrabel has the horses this week.
And by the way, I don't know if Vrabel's a good coach. I'm just telling you, he comes from a different... This is a different deal. This is a different deal than Eric Mangini. Guy in Boston.
Hello.
Yeah, Guy, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah. You keep saying the Titans have a lot of ex-Patriot personnel. If I'm not getting Alzheimer's, I believe the Houston Texans do also. How did that game end up? Thank you.
You haven't heard me. I don't care about Malcolm. Malcolm Butler doesn't scare me. Logan Ryan doesn't scare me. Deion Lewis I respect because I think he can hurt you. But not because he's a former Patriot, just because
of his skill set.
He's a shifty pass-catching running back, and you have trouble with those guys. Vrabel, I'll tell you, has me thinking a little differently. But he might not even be a good coach. It's like, I don't know. Right, so I'm not exactly sure what Guy's point is. I don't fear the Titans.
Yeah, look, I think that what Vrabel has done is he's instilled an attitude down there that they're going to play aggressively, they're going to play to win, which has both blown up on him and worked in his favor here in the early part of the year. So I think there's a lot of that. Like, I just think that Tennessee team down there, under the circumstances, you're coming off a Green Bay win, you get the bye the next week. Like, it just feels like a tricky spot.
Okay, meanwhile, how do we feel about the way the Patriots are playing? The Patriots, how are they playing? How are they playing offensively? Bedard had some interesting commentary yesterday. I want to follow up on that with Paul Perillo from Patriots Football Weekly. Let's get some sunshine in our life. Who's singing it today, Murray?
Hey, you know, I thought I would show some love to the guy that should have been the MVP of the World Series. How about we get some David Price
David
to sing?
Price.
Oh, I like it.
David Price sings Sunshine Day. Coming up right after Murray's update, 90 seconds, no commercials.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.